everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramelides, here to talk about Spanish football with Dr. Sid Lowe. Hello, Sidney.
Hello, Philip. How are you?
I'm very well, my friend. You're back from a few days travelling around Spain, as you are wont to do.
Yeah, it was slightly chaotic this time, but made it in the end.
You did make it in the end, yes. Maybe we'll talk more about that in just a second. Let's give you the match day 33 results. Real Madrid were playing on Friday night because they asked for an extra day's rest ahead of their Champions League game with Bayern Munich on Tuesday evening, which La Liga duly obliged with. They also moved five other matches, but we don't need to get into that. This is what happened. Friday night, Real Madrid beating Real Sociedad by 1-0, the only goal of the game scored by Arda Güler, the teenage Turkish sensation, on his first start of the season in the league and scoring his second league goal. Then on Saturday, Girona cemented their push for second place by beating Las Palmas 2-0 on the island of Gran Canaria. Artem Dovbik scoring and leading the Pichichi charts at the time of recording with 19 league goals. Then Getafe beat Almeria 3-1 at the Power Horse Stadium. I will miss saying the words Power Horse Stadium next season, because they've been officially relegated as one of the worst teams in La Liga history. Alaves with a thumping 3-0 win over Celta Vigo, and Atletico Madrid beating Athletic Club by 3-1. Sunday saw Cadiz and Mallorca play out a 1-1 draw. It was a game that Cadiz really needed to win. They had an unbelievably good chance to do so as well in the 91st minute, but Roger Marti inexplicably shot wide when the goal was gaping. Granada postponed their relegation by beating Osasuna 3-0 at home. Great result for them. And José Ramón Sandoval's had a real impact since coming in, somewhat surprisingly, but they've given themselves a mathematical chance of avoiding relegation. Theoretically, they are still going down, but they are 10 points from safety with four matches to play. Villarreal beating Rayo 3-0. Betis and Sevilla playing out a 1-1 draw. See how quickly I went over the Rayo scoreline. Villarreal beating Rayo 3-0.
Yeah, that was really fast. Impressive.
And Betis and Sevilla playing out a 1-1 draw in El Gran Derby, the Seville derby, which Sydney was at. Monday night football is Barcelona against Valencia. So Barca in action on a Monday night, which is not usual. So we won't be talking too much about Barcelona on today's podcast. Coming up this week for patrons, a Q&A pod on Tuesday, a bonus pod talking Bayern Munich and Real Madrid in their Champions League semi-final, and a new episode of TSFP Presents Super Seasons. That's all coming up for patrons who pay around €4 a month for loads of extra Spanish football content. Patreon.com/TSFP. We also got some snazzy merch, by the way, which is still on sale. Gambea.com/TSFP. Gambea.com/TSFP. We've got a lovely, lovely t-shirt. It's very fetching socks as well. We've had the photos from listeners who have received their packages from Gambea, and everybody seems to be pretty happy with what they've purchased so far. So why not join them? Sydney, the talking points from this week. Logically, we should start with the Seville derby, which is where on any other weekend we probably would have started. But I feel that we've got to start with what happened at the Metropolitano again. And what happened at the Metropolitano, and I didn't mention it in the intro, but this was the most newsworthy thing to come out of this game, was that Nico Williams was subjected to monkey chants. He went over to take a corner and he heard someone monkey chanting him from the crowd. He told the referee. Referee stopped the game. Protocol, the La Liga protocol, was implemented. There was announcements on the megaphones, on the tannoy system. Please stop being racist. And the game continued. Nico Williams scored and then came out and spoke about this afterwards. His brother speaking about it as well. La Liga have reported it to prosecutors today. Police have identified a fan. Atleti say they'll ban him if he's a socio. Now, here we are again, Sid. We've been doing this podcast for 11 years. Mm. We've had to talk about racism in Spanish football many, many times. And I'm guessing we'll do so again, because this is an ongoing problem. I think there's two aspects to this, if you'll allow me to elaborate on this. Mm-hmm. The one thing is the social aspect of racism in Spanish society, which is a problem. Mm-hmm. But I don't think It's unique to Spain because racism exists everywhere. Everywhere. It's not just Spain is more racist than other countries. You're telling me the USA isn't racist? You're telling me there isn't racism in the UK? Of course there is. This is something that is inherent to the human condition, I think. People fearing the unknown, fearing what is different. And that is something else that we have to work towards as a society to try and improve. What I feel like we need to improve here with Spanish football is that Spanish black footballers need to be able to go to their place of work without fear of being racially abused, which, broadly speaking, in places like England, and God knows there are problems there with, you know, racial and social issues, but in terms of black players going to a football stadium and, generally speaking, not being racially abused, that seems to be doable. It seems to be within their grasp. How do we get to that here, Sid? How do we get to a point where black players can go to a stadium and fear that they're not going to be, and you know, not being racially abused? The only thing that I can see is if you give out the kind of punishments that make people in the ground then self-police. So we're not here to solve racism, even if, you know, these people who think these despicable things, they can think it. But at the very least, they need to be not so emboldened that they can say it in a stadium. I've talked a lot. You tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, I think one of the things that may become a discussion point from this will be the nature of the protocol to deal with this. Because, of course, the protocol was followed this time, which involves an announcement over the loudspeakers and then the threat that if this happens again, then the teams will be taken off the pitch. I guess there is probably an inclination, I don't know about you, but I feel like there's an inclination now to say, well, let's skip that first step, that it happens immediately. I suppose maybe the risk with that is the risk that people mishear, the risk that referees don't want to take that responsibility, the risk that players don't want to take that responsibility. But I think you're right, for this to be something that just doesn't happen, then the more you move in towards, as you say, a scenario in which people don't feel emboldened or don't feel like they've got the impunity with which to act and to which to say racist things or make monkey chants or abuse players on the basis of their nationality, their colour, their skin and so on. I guess one thing is that some of the things that we would probably all agree that need to be done, some of them are being done. I thought one of the things that was interesting in this is that we saw, I think in the past, I think it's been too easy for other players to kind of ignore it, for referees and officials to ignore it, for people around the stadium to ignore it. One of the things that was noticeable this weekend, there's a handful of things in terms of the reaction to this. One of them is that as soon as Nico says it, the linesman talks to him and listens. There isn't a confrontation. Now, that's not always the case, but this time there was. That you get Atletico Madrid players come to Nico Williams and try to speak to him and try to understand him rather than try to say to him, get on with it. You know, so there's an awareness that this isn't what we want to happen from the Atletico Madrid players. And then you get a moment, for example, if you watch the footage, there's a moment when Griezmann has finished speaking to Nico Williams and he turns away and there's a kind of rolling of the eyes at the fans, which isn't a particularly bold thing to do, but then there is a gesture. And there's a gesture as well from Jimenez, who appears to be talking to fans. The other thing that happens is you see quite a lot of the fans in the stands. Now, obviously, this is a difficult thing to address properly because you don't know exactly what they heard or if indeed they didn't hear anything at all. And you see quite a lot of the fans wagging their fingers saying that, not that, there wasn't that, we didn't hear that. And obviously, it's good if they didn't hear it. What we want, of course, as you say, is a step in which fans, when they do hear it, say something and call it out and take that collective responsibility. Now, of course, that's a really difficult thing to do in that kind of environment, which is why, of course, there need to be mechanisms for it to happen without, you know, with, you know, the risk of going down the cliched route, without having to confront someone very, very big who's likely to punch you or whatever it may be. Yeah, so that you have to have the mechanisms where you can deal with it. And I think some of those things are in place, but I think we still feel like we're stopping short. But fundamentally, that's the key thing, isn't it? It's about the change in the way that we react to this. It's about making this behaviour that is just agreed to be absolutely unacceptable. As you say, it's very difficult. It's impossible to change people's mindsets, to change people the way people think, to change the kind of prejudices they might have internally, to change some of those prejudices they may not even be aware that they have. but you can change the environment for it. And to pick up on what you were saying, there was something I thought, Iñaki always speaks really, really well, and he's older than Nico, and so it's not a huge surprise, and I think the kind of experiences he's had are different. So I think it's not a huge surprise that actually what he said was possibly more interesting than what Nico said. And he said something which I think was really important. You talked about this as black players being allowed to go to their place of work and not fear this. Well, Iñaki said something really interesting, which was to expand it beyond them. And he said, we as players can deal with this. You know, it's not right, but it's kind of something, the abuse, the pressure, whether it's racist abuse or not, but abuse, that sense of people being on top of you, that sense of having a thick skin, all of that stuff comes with being a player. But he made the point, which I think is really, really important, that this isn't just about us, it's about everybody else. It's about the impact it has on black people in society, not just athletes, not just footballers, about the fact that if you racially abuse one person, you racially abuse a whole load of people. And I think this is one of the key things in this, that there is this kind of justificatory line that we've heard a lot, and in particular we've heard it around Vinicius, which is that, oh, it's not really racism, it's just them trying to put him off. Now, even if the motivation is just trying to put him off, the tools you choose to use are racist. And the impact it has on people, not just Vinicius in that case, or Nico Williams in this case, or any number of black players who have been abused, have an impact way beyond the football stadium, way beyond the pitch, which is one of the reasons why it's really important. And the other part of that justificatory discourse that we've had around Vinicius, and I've said before, and I think it's important to remember this, Vinicius forced people to confront this. And I think that was a really good thing and a really brave thing. At a time when maybe some people would have preferred to just let it go, Vinicius forced people to confront it. And so Vinicius is helping to force change. What has happened with Vinicius, of course, is that some people say, well, it's because he's provocative, it's because he's winding them up. Well, what you see on this occasion, of course, is that winding up, first of all, isn't a justification anyway, but here's someone being abused, that none of those justifications, it just makes a complete mockery of that argument, that is a justification. If the tool you choose is racist, you are a racist. And I suppose, yeah, I don't, you know, here we are looking for an answer. As you say, there isn't really an answer as such. My optimist, and we've discussed this loads of times, me and you, and obviously because I've been here longer, maybe, and because I lived first person, that really horrendous experience of the England-Spain game at the Bernabeu in which year was it? 2006, two? I think.
Oh, was it six?
I can't remember which year. Yeah, 2005 maybe, or six, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think my tendency is to be a bit more optimistic than you, because I see some of the change and some of what we saw this weekend, I promise you, we wouldn't have seen 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so in that sense, I allow myself to maybe be a bit more optimistic, that there is a recognition, that there is an understanding, and that now we just keep pushing until we try and get the outcome that I think we need to get.
Do you think, though, but if there were these kind of exemplary bans, like even if one person, you know, is doing a monkey chant, right, OK, bam, stadium is closed for the next game.
Yeah.
Don't you think something...
Yes. Yeah.
Like that harsh,
I must
but
admit,
that...
I am... On not in the question of racism specifically, but more generally, I am uneasy about the collectivization of punishment for an individual act in general, in all sorts of spheres of life. I know, for example, that I go to football games and I'm surrounded by lots of people who might misbehave. And there's a bit of me that recoils at the idea that I would be held responsible for it. But I do agree with you that this feels like something where it would be useful to find a way to force people or help people, encourage people to take collective responsibility. And I'm very, very uneasy about it. But I must admit, I am inclined towards that. The same as you, I am inclined towards saying, OK, this has to have an impact. Now, obviously, I must confess, I am more comfortable with the idea that we can fight when it is a one person. And I don't know if it might be more than one this time, obviously. But if there is a person and we can find him and that person gets punished, I am more comfortable with that. But I do agree that it feels like one of the ways to do this is to ensure that others take responsibility for it. That said, I also think one of the ways to do it is for that one person basically to know they can be caught, to know that a camera will see them, to know that they will be dragged out, to know that they will be told that they are not going back to a game again, to know that if they are a season ticket holder at Atletico Madrid or at Real Oviedo or Real Madrid or at Barcelona, that they are not going back. That season ticket is being taken off them and not being given back to them. And so I prefer that, but I do agree that we're in a situation where I do think that possibly some sort of collective punishment is beneficial. And of course, we come off the back of, and in a way, this is a more significant one, what happened with Raya Majadahonda, and the application of the racism protocols meant that they forfeited the game and that their goalkeeper, who was subject to racist abuse, got a ban. Now, admittedly, he didn't get a ban for being subject to racist abuse. He got a ban because he confronted the referee and because he was aggressive with the referee. But some degree of understanding. And even if those are the protocols and the rules, when it goes to the competition committee, surely at that point, there needs to be some contextualisation of his behaviour. And there needs to be some contextualisation of what it is he's just confronted. And I would like that to happen as well. And I do understand the reasons for protocols, and I do understand the reasons why you have a series of rules and a framework and you think that you have to stick to it. But there are times when I think, you know what, the framework can get in the bin.
I felt we had to talk about this because every time it does happen, it can't just be, oh, it's happened again, let's see, because I wasn't watching the game and I'd heard about what happened and I went onto the website of AS on Sunday morning to see what I could find. Couldn't find anything about this. Scroll down, 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 down.
Oh, really? I didn't realise
that. Way down.
Okay.
And I found the match report, and it was a match report with, you know, a couple of lines about what happened, but it wasn't, you know, a big thing. So, yeah, I felt like we need to keep talking about it always, and yeah, try and find some kind of answer. I don't know.
And I think, I mean, you know, as I say, that the positive thing as well is I think in Iñaki and Nico, we have two fantastic examples, you know, two brilliant footballers, two really bright, I was about to use the word kids, that's incredibly patronising, but in Nico's case, obviously, he is very young, you know, who really understand and express and explain this really, really well. And I hope that that too can have a positive impact.
Tell me about the Seville derby, Sid. You were there pitch side for Betis 1, Sevilla 1, a game that Betis really should probably have won.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with you. Although, funny enough, some of the Sevilla players, Nyland, the goalkeeper, post game said, "I thought we were the better side."
And well, you weren't, Oliver.
The fact that despite the fact that he made a handful of good saves,
yeah,
it wasn't a brilliant game. I must admit, this was a funny weekend, wasn't it? This was a weekend that felt like it had loads of games that might have been massive, but none of them actually were in the end. Because the results went against them becoming massive, if you see what I mean, in terms of the consequences. So, of course, Cadiz, if they'd beaten Mallorca, would have been massive, and it wasn't. Atletico, if they'd lost to Athletic, would have been massive, but it wasn't. Betis, if they won this, would have been really big in terms of it would have virtually secured that final European place, which they might get anyway, but it was a draw, so it wasn't. This was a game where it wasn't great, but I tell you something, and I've said this before, but sitting pitch side, in the first half at least, and being on the left-hand side of the Betis' attack, every time that Isco and Ayoce played together, combined, you know, in a game that was kind of, to use the Spanish cliche of, a strong-legged game, a game of flying tackles and aggression and intensity and so on, those two really looked like they were actually enjoying it. You know, and Isco in particular, maybe more so than Ayoce, but it looked like Isco particularly enjoyed it when he and Ayoce combined. He was named man of the match, which he always is. I think it's just a popularity contest now, but actually, he probably deserves it. He's a lovely footballer to watch, although he did tire a lot in the second half in what was fundamentally not a great game. By the way, that's four derbies in a row that have finished with a draw.
Yes, it feels like it's always 1-1. Yeah.
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 Well, there you go. It quite literally is, statistically. Well, not always, but, you know, very often.
We were doing a TV show together on Thursday, and I think you said about Ayoce Perez, that he is a lovely player that we don't necessarily talk about enough.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really, really good in this game.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And one of the things that was very noticeable to me, there's a great Spanish word, which I don't know if there's an English equivalent to it. I can't think of one. I suppose you could say trying to get unmarked. But they when you talk about picar, when a player pica el espacio or pasa el partido picando, that kind of desire to get the ball, look for the space and then make the little dash into the gap, or to play the little clipped pass that releases the player, the teammate that's making the dash into that space, often from a wide position inside or often from a kind of inside position into a more central position. And Ayoce does that constantly. It's really interesting watching him up close, how well he combines with people, how determined he is to see that little bit of space that no one else can see, or to make that pass that other people don't make. And as I say, when him and Isco come together, it's really, really good. And they very definitely incline to the left, Betis because of those two players combining, much more so than on the right hand side where they didn't create quite so much. And it was interesting as well seeing Bakambu, because he was only starting, I think, for the second time this season. And I think that what Pellegrini has seen in him is a mobility that maybe allows those other players to get a bit more from the game, that maybe allows them to stretch those kind of runs that I'm talking about, that kind of picar al espacio thing, and kind of create opportunities. Now, he then got injured being sent clean through one-on-one. It's almost embarrassing for him, really. He's running through and his muscle goes and he puts the shot wide. But it was, you know, Betis were the better side and they do play a lot more football than Sevilla, who I personally think, for next season, have a huge amount to fix. An absolutely huge amount to fix. I think they are a mess. Genuinely, I do.
Okay. Where does the rebuild start then?
Well, the rebuild starts with the manager. That's the first thing. Because there isn't a huge amount of conviction about Kike Sanchez Flores. And so if you start with a manager, or at least you start with an idea that the manager and the players fit in, I think the worst thing that can happen is that they have a repeat of what has occurred over the last couple of years, is of a collection of players that are nothing to do with the vision of the manager, a series of managers that don't really have very much in common with each other. I really don't like this idea of, that, you know, we talk about a lot, oh, you've got to wipe it all out and start again from scratch. You know, every time a team loses a competition, root and branch change. And I think sometimes that kind of blinds us to the fact that actually a few small changes can make a big difference. But I do think they need a clarity of an idea, which they don't have. My doubt would be, can they even encounter that at institutional level? Because internally, as a club, they're in trouble as well, not just as a team.
Yeah, they've had a few managers over the last couple of years. What is it? 6 or 7 coaches in the last 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, they maybe need a bit more stability. Just before we move on, in terms of people listening to this podcast who, I assume, have a passing interest in Spanish football, and in also going to Spanish football matches, just tell us how much of a bucket list fixture the Seville derby is at the Benito Villamarín as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you've asked me that, because in a way, you know, me talking about a not particularly good game and only really highlighting two players out of a handful that kind of stood out for one reason or another, but only really two that were genuinely impressive, it kind of makes it sound like it's not up to much. But as an occasion, it's fantastic. The noise was brilliant. I mean, obviously, it's exaggerated perhaps by me sitting so close. I was actually at the south end in the first half, and then at the side of the pitch in the second half, and the south end with that mosaic behind, and the noise and the kind of the sense of the place trembling when they're thundering at the advertising boards with their palms and singing and bouncing up and down. It really is. Yeah, it's a great fixture, and if you do get the chance to go at some point, and actually, you know what, it doesn't matter enormously if you go to it at Betis or at Sevilla. At both grounds, it's brilliant.
It's true, but it's bigger at Betis's, literally bigger.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, it's physically bigger in terms of the number of fans. Yeah, and it, I don't know what it is. I don't know why it feels like a slightly bigger occasion there.
Yes.
I can't quite put my finger on it, but it does slightly. I don't know why.
Let's move on. You were in San Sebastian on Friday night to see Real Madrid beat Real Sociedad. The game wasn't up to too much, and it was played the large part of the first half in unbelievable conditions, just pouring rain. Yeah. Sorry to bring that up again, Sid. You must have got absolutely drenched.
I did, yeah.
I mean, it was really... hadn't rained all day, apparently, and then started peeing with rain when the game kicked off. I guess Arda Güler starting and scoring is the headline to take out of this. I mean, there wasn't too much else in this game.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, you look at their starting 11, Eder Militao, Brahim, Joselu, Dani Ceballos, Fran García, Kepa and Arda. Right, that's 7 players who wouldn't normally start for Real Madrid. Now, all right, maybe Eder Militao would have done had it not been this season, but of course he's coming back from an injury. There were a couple of moments actually where I thought he looked a little bit unsure about taking a step forward. There's one moment he almost looked like he was unsure on his feet, kind of almost fell over trying to control a ball. I mean, that's probably a one-off. I thought Arda Güler looked pretty good. He moved the ball well through the midfield. He played slightly deeper than I think I thought I was expecting him to. He seemed to be closer to the kind of to the middle three than the front three for periods of the game. It wasn't a great performance from Real Madrid, to be honest. It was a Real Madrid doing Real Madrid, really. One of those games where the other team maybe has quite a lot of the ball, doesn't really create a huge amount. And it's very opportunistic, this. But watching Sorloth score 2 more for Villarreal at the weekend, and then watching Real Sociedad, well, and having watched Real Sociedad on a Friday night, you think, wow, they really messed up there, didn't they? Letting him go and then spending money on, well, on having three forwards that none of whom actually start anymore, because I thought I did. And Real Sociedad had more of the ball. They had more, I think, more sense of intent, more sense of desire to go and make things happen, but actually didn't make that much happen. And so in that sense, you know, this was a pretty good performance from Real Madrid, who, of course, will win the league and might well have it wrapped up next week.
They might do. They're at home to Cadiz on Saturday afternoon. A friend of mine is trying to get tickets for that game. Absolutely impossible. When first thing this morning, they go on sale at 10 o'clock. He was there on the online queue, 10:01, and there was 8,000 people in front of it with the queue. So I think everyone wants a ticket for the Bernabeu this weekend, because they might wrap up the league title, depending on what Barca do tonight, of course. Shout out to Girona. Here's a good stat. No team that isn't Madrid, Barca or Atleti have ever got as many points after 33 games, 71. So it's another record for this record-breaking historic Girona side, who are, of course, in only their fourth season ever in La Liga. Another victory. And they're currently second in the table. Yeah. And continue.
Yeah, and are going to get the Champions League place, aren't they? And the fact that they have been in the Champions League position all season, the fact that at one point we wondered if they might even compete for the title, shouldn't disguise how much of an achievement that is. It really is a big achievement. I mean, I was looking at the statistics today, the salary limits in La Liga. Now, admittedly, they don't tell you absolutely everything. But what if I tell you that Girona's salary limit is 53 million euros this year? Atletico's is 300. Barcelona's is, I think, 170-something, if I remember rightly. You know, there's not many teams over 150, but there's quite a few ahead of Girona. And Girona's 52 million. Almeria spent
Real Madrid's is 700, isn't it?
In transfer fees alone, 52 million this summer.
Yes. Didn't do them much good, did it? A historically bad season for Almeria. What's going on in the Segunda División, Sid?
Well, no one wants to win it. No one wants to get into playoffs. And every time you think there's a chance, I've suddenly gone very depressed, haven't I? Every time you think there's a chance, it doesn't quite happen. And so Sporting were beaten 3-0 by Villarreal B. Leganes drew again. They've drawn, I think it might be five in a row now that they've drawn.
Yep.
Oviedo, Rathing weren't able to win. Oviedo went and lost 1-0 at home to Tenerife.
That's basically what happened in the Segunda División. Thanks for the roundup. But yeah, the headline is that Oviedo are blowing it again.
Yeah. Do you know the best story of the weekend, though, Phil?
Go on.
It actually came from a division below the Segunda Division, in Primera Ref, where Club Deportivo Arenteiro played their goalkeeping coach.
Yes.
Because they have three goalkeepers, none of whom were able to play. They tried to buy an emergency player in midweek, couldn't manage to get a deal done. So they registered their goalkeeping coach to play for them this weekend against Deportivo La Coruña, in front of 28,000 people. Their goalkeeping coach had begun his playing career in Depor's B team, is a Deportivo fan, had never played in front of that many people at Riazor, goes to Riazor, goes up for a corner in the last minute with a score at 2-1, gets a shot off, doesn't score, but it does drop to a teammate who gets the equaliser. How about that for a story of the weekend?
My word, that would have been... If he'd scored... My goodness. Yeah, that would have been incredible.
Completely brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah. Great scenes as well from that game, by the way. Whenever Deportivo play a fellow Galician side, they have the Galician anthem played out before.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
And they all sing it together, and it's fantastic. So, yeah. All right, this week we've got Bayern Munich against Real Madrid on Tuesday. Sid, we don't think he's going to be there, sadly. But
no,
probably,
sadly not.
Probably for the best in terms of
it might be,
relentless, non-stop European travel. Yes. Could do with a slight break.
Yeah.
So there we go. We'll watch that on Tuesday and we'll talk about it on the bonus pod. Send us your questions as well for the Q&A podcast, which we'll do tomorrow. Patreon.com/TSFP. Loads of content for the discerning Spanish football fan over there. For you less discerning Spanish football fans who just want the free stuff, don't worry. We'll be here next week. We'll do it all again then. Adios.
Cheerio.